Well, as soon as the music came up, you started smiling.
Okay, but I can't help but smile when that music comes on.
Oh, I thought you were smiling because it was like the regular music and not Van Halen.
Oh, well, like that too. But, you know, it's
sorry.
Just...
I halfway apologize for throwing y'all a curveball last week with the opening music.
Halfway?
Yeah, halfway. Because I enjoyed it. I thought a lot of people could go, what's going on? like many people, you know, worry about that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, welcome into another Saturday. It has been a tough couple of weeks, busy-wise. Everybody knows what that's like. If you don't know, I have an accounting practice, and Taylor's in high school, so we're both kind of stretched then. And this was the final extension deadline for tax season 2019, I guess. I don't know. I always think a year behind or a year ahead. I can't. I'm never in the present, it doesn't seem like. So
it's not good.
It's not good. So anyway, yes, it's very – and so we're gonna run the interview that we did with Charles Ruth,
mm-hmm,
about deer season and then we actually touched on a little bit of turkey stuff too. So apologies for those that have heard that show. It's a good show. But yeah, as the first guy on the stage last Thursday at Santee, and I can't remember who it was to save my life, got up there, the first angler, he goes, well, it was a grind out there. And I'm like, oh, really? Really? This is the best we can do when talking about this? But yes, the last few weeks around here has been a grind. We did not have time to get a new show done. So we'll listen to
Charles.
I wasn't even able
to go to Santee. Which was
no, you weren't even allowed to go to Santee. I made it down for 2 days and had to come back and do the adult thing. But boy, Taylor, what a place.
Mm.
Santee. I mean, the site. If you want to see some of it, I've got one gallery up from Thursday on the Woods and Water South Carolina Facebook page. You can look at some of it. Actually, Friday's gallery, which I'll get up sometime first of the week. I guess Thursday we ran around, and what it was Neil Paul from Visit Anderson was there, and I was in the boat with him, and I was taking still shots, and he was doing Skype Lives with guys who did not have cameras, mm-hmm, in the boats with them. So we, Taco Ito, Buddy Gross, I knew I'd forget some people, Corey Johnston. There were a couple others in there, and then but mostly that was on like the lake part, and we got up to Jack's Creek at the end of the day for Corey Johnson. He was flipping pads, but the gallery from Friday when we got up into the actual swamps and low falls landing area, and so it's just absolutely gorgeous, folks. It's worth the trip down. Towing a 16-foot John boat with a 25-horsepower Johnson on it to just ride around. Because, I mean, you're in between the trees. I mean, cypress trees everywhere, and you're just kind of maneuvering through them, and you don't do anything more than idle because you're bouncing off of this and running over that. And
keel guards.
We thought we tore off the prop at one time because we went to get back up on plane, and it was wobbling. The steering wheel and the motor and the boat was shaking. And he's like, well, I knew we hit something kind of hard back there, but I didn't think we hit it that hard. Luckily, it was just a wad of, you know, grass and all that on the motor. We hit one pretty hard. Launched the boat off to the right-hand side. I mean, it was tough. But anyway.
I got to ask, did you get Patriot vibes when you're down there? Black swamp.
Patriot
and
vibes. Yeah, I mean, there were some instances where there were, that you could imagine yourself in there. Yep. There were also some instances where, you know, if you were on the Chattooga River, you'd be thinking about banjo music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
Really cool place. So Santee, if you ever get a chance to go back there and explore those Blackwater swamps up in the upper end, above the I-95 bridge, just some beautiful. We never made it down the lower lake. Steve Kennedy was down there. I think they had the whole place for himself. Mm-hmm. Nobody went to Marion. Everybody stayed up in the upper. Good tournament. Not really a lot of weight.
I watched a little bit of Bass Live as much as I could, and you know, listen to the guys talk. They're like, we just love coming down here. It's unique. It's unique fishing, and it's. They said the weather is gonna switch some things around, but they came out with it.
Parts of the lake were turning over. Mm-hmm. So some of those creeks had that dirty, real dirty look. But there were some good fish caught, and it was fun watching them.
And I wish I could have been there.
We'll get down there and fish. We went to one place that I will never tell anybody where we were, but it was absolutely gorgeous. And I'm sure there were some big old bass around those cypress trees. It just had to be. Just had to be. So anyway, got Charles Ruth coming up the rest of the show. We do have some calendar events thing. Taylor, you want to start us off?
Sure, I can. Who is it brought to you by, Dad?
Visit Anderson Green Pond Landing and Event Center.
Aha!
There you go.
Had to
I don't mess
you
it up like
it.
You do. Go ahead.
South Carolina Department of Natural Resources is coming back with their Saltwater Family Fishing Clinic. So
yes.
If you're in the Georgetown area, they will be hosting it at Hobcall Barony. And that is the first clinic. They have two clinics here. The first clinic is Thursday, October 22nd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. is registration. And then the Saltwater number 2 is October 24th. There'll be an hour and a half slots just to maintain social distancing, not have overloads of people. You do have to wear a mask. This is just basic skills on how to tie knots, rig a rod and reel, casting. Kids from ages 4 to adults are welcome to come. They do ask that you watch some of their instructional videos on their website just so you can have a basic knowledge of how to do some of the stuff. It'll go faster. Bring a hat, sunglasses, bug spray, and a reusable water bottle. And it's free.
Because you do go fishing.
You do.
Yes.
Yes. And it's completely free. They will do it rain or shine unless hazardous weather conditions. So go check that one out. You can go to their website to register.
Miss this one. Shellfish season open October the 1st. If you're so inclined to go pick your own oysters, there's a certain section of Lighthouse Creek that has a special place in my heart because the first time I went oystering for one of the CharlestonFishing.com's oyster roasts that we used to do all the time, got in there, and well, the guys I was picking with, every once in a while I heard him say, "Darn, broke another one." And I've never picked oysters. I was being really careful. I mean, I was, holy smoke, I was tapping, trying to get the Devons off and all this stuff. And he broke another one. I was terrified of breaking an oyster out there. And finally he did it like the third or fourth time, and I turned around and was like, "What is he doing?" And he's eating the oyster.
Mm.
So in other words, it was a joke, and the joke was on me. And so I promptly turned around, grabbed one, busted it open, and ate it right there on light. And it was January. The water was cold. That thing was salty, and it just, oh, it was so good.
You're making me hungry, Daddy.
So anyway, shellfish season opens October 1st. A lot of people say, "What? How do I go pick oysters or whatever?" Well, it's really simple. You get a 5-gallon bucket, which is about a bushel of oysters, I believe. I think that's what they say. And you get you, like a rock hammer or an electrician's hammer. I got a special one down there. So, and you find you a public shellfish ground, which if you go to the Department of Natural Resources website and you click on news, it'll show you the news for shellfish season opens. You click it, it takes you to a press release, and it has an interactive map of both DHEC closures. If there's any closures due to warm water temperatures or, you know, sewage spills or whatever may take place, and then a recreational map web application where you click on it and you use that plus or minus on your computer, and it'll zoom in and show you which are public grounds, which are commercial grounds, and all. And you can go pick yourself some oysters, and they're really good. The later in the year, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So, and look at that. I didn't even start the music. Oh, well. We'll pick that up. But anyway, didn't get to that, but luckily that runs for a while.
Yep.
So.
We'll come back next week. I have some special plans next week.
Okay, good. I'm glad you do, because I have no idea what we're doing next week.
It's not good.
It's not good. All I know is I am going deer hunting for a few days here.
You mean we.
We, okay. You can go with me.
I can?
You can.
Can?
All right.
Really?
Maybe. All right. Y'all hang on. Back with more Woods and Water South on the other side. Welcome back to another segment of Woods and Water South Carolina. It's going to be a lot of deer talk today, because I'm joined by someone who's become over the last 6 years a really good friend of mine, and enjoy talking to him wherever I see him. It's like we don't see each other enough, Charleston, but that kind of keeps it good, because when we do see each other, it's we talk a lot, and I really enjoy our conversations together, and thanks for taking time to be on the show today.
Yep, Roger, always good to talk with you. Yes, sir, buddy.
Absolutely. But how are things? Let's just get a little update from Columbia. How are things at DNR, and you guys ready for, I guess we got dove season and deer season, and, man, it's just wide open here in South Carolina now.
Yep, fixing to get into a busy time of year. Right off the bat, deer hunters, if you don't have your deer tag, you need to take care of it. We've already issued, over 200,000 sets of tags. We think we're behind. I mean, we think we're ahead of it at this point.
Okay.
It's all been done. And I know your season in the upstate will open here in a couple of weeks. But, you know, with the low country season, we have to push those tags out.
Sure.
You know, but back at the end of July. So I've kind of wiped sweat from my brow on that, because I think we're, like I said, we're on the backside of deer tags.
Let me ask you this. If someone still hasn't got them, if they ordered them, or, you know, they think they should have come with their license, and those renewal dates on the licenses, that's a key player in this thing too, isn't it?
Yeah, if a resident hunter has an active hunting license that was active August 15th, they should have already gotten the base set of tags. So if they look at their license and it was active on August 15th and they hadn't gotten their tags, they need to, you know, call our licensing section.
Okay, all right. And that's how to handle it. Don't bombard everybody with emails and stuff like that. Simply call the licensing division and get it worked out from there.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, if you need extra doe tags or the extra, you know, antler restriction buck tags, you can do it. You know, we've got a call center that you can do it on there. You can go on our website and get your tags. And for that matter, if you haven't gotten your tag, you know, youth hunters, they still need to request their tag.
That's right.
This year, for the first time, we actually started sending without them having to request. We were sending tags to all of the lifetime license and senior license types.
Okay.
But that's already been accomplished.
Okay.
So,
okay. And there's one thing you mentioned, youth. Now, at what point does youth stop and you got to be a regular licensed hunter and have your hunter education card and course completed?
Yep.
That's 16,
yep.
Taylor, this
that's
year.
Correct. Yep, the age at licensing is 16.
Okay.
And, of course, in order to get that first license, you have to have completed the Hunter Ed course, and then, of course, you will have a license from there on out. So, you know, youth hunters less than 16, they don't have a license. We don't know who you are. You know, you need to take action, and you can go online. You kind of have to act like you're buying something.
Right.
But once you get to the list of privileges, you know, you set yourself up, or have your parents set yourself up with your name, your address, your date of birth. You will be assigned a DNR customer ID, which will stick with you from now on.
Okay.
Again, you kind of got to act like you're buying something, but when you get to the list of privileges, look for youth deer tags. All you got to do is check the box.
Okay.
To finish the transaction, and there is no fee for them because they're free, you know.
Right. Youth, now the youth day has already happened in 3 and 4. Youth day zone 2 is September 12th.
It's always, Roger, it's always the Saturday
before
the normal opener.
Archery.
Yep.
Yep.
So that will be, let's see here.
Sorry, I caught you off guard.
September 12th.
Yep, September 12th.
No, that's correct, September 12th. Yeah, and of course we still have the postseason youth day, which is the Saturday after the close of the season, which I think this year is like the 2nd.
Okay.
So, you know, the preseason youth day is buck only.
Right.
One buck. The postseason youth day is two deer either sex. And in both cases, tags are not required for those youth hunts. So, you know, it's a little bit different.
And that is right. January 2nd is the first Saturday in
That's
January.
Correct. Yep.
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 So, yeah, I was Taylor's doing the Hunter Ed course, and I mean, some good information in there. I've been really, really she's been really excited about taking it. And she got to hurry up and finish it up, though.
Yeah, time's coming.
That's it, time's coming. I told her she's going to be able to hunt 2 days this year if she doesn't get it done. September 12th and January 2nd.
That's right.
There's a little motivation for you. Look, every year you crunch a bunch of numbers. You crunch a lot of numbers. And produce for us. And how many years have you been doing this deer report?
Forever, as long as I've been with the agency. Okay. And who, you know, Daryl Shipes, who was the deer program coordinator before me, you know, we've always done a report like this. Now, okay, what changed was over those years, the internet came on the scene and all these postings and so forth. So I don't know how long we've been posting this material on our website.
Okay.
I can't remember that far back, but yeah, we've always done it. And you know, Roger, we changed how we document the deer harvest back in the late 90s, and a lot of folks will still remember, you know, in the day we had check stations.
Right.
And that was a count, it was a body count. It was a minimum count of harvested animals because not everybody took their deer to the check station.
Right.
So we kind of changed gears and started using a random license-based survey, and that's what we still do.
Okay.
We do it. Yep. Do it the same. It's a, you know, everybody over time should get selected, but you're not going to get selected every year because, you know, we got 175,000 licensees. You can't afford, nor do you need statistically to survey everyone. So we do a random sample of these license holders that have a deer type license.
Okay.
Never change anything about how we structure the survey. Now, some questions may change over time, but the meat and potatoes, that being, did you deer hunt? Did you kill a deer? If so, how many deer did you kill? What county did you kill them in? How many days did you hunt? So forth. Those things never change. So
okay.
I tell folks that the numbers that we produce, you know, obviously they're not exactly right.
Sure.
But if they're wrong, they're wrong the same way all the time. And from a management standpoint, what we want to see is the trend. Is harvest up, down, or stable? And really, if you look at what happened with our 2019 deer season, it was flatline. It was about 1% below 2018.
Okay.
You know, you're looking at about 195,000 deer being harvested. Of course, 2019 was the third year where we had the, quote, all deer have to be tagged situation. You know, we've got all deer being tagged.
Okay.
We've got a uniform limit on bucks. And so there was really not a lot of notable takeaways, you know, 2019 versus 2018. One thing I will say is that the harvest was about flat, but what we saw was an increase in the proportion of does in the harvest. So apparently, and to me, and I'm not going to go out on the limb just yet,
okay,
it's kind of indicative that the buck tags and the uniform buck limit may be doing what it's supposed to, and that is, you know, taking a little bit of pressure off the bucks, okay?
Okay.
And that's a good thing. You know, doe harvest went up, you know, has gone up since we started the tagging program 18%, whereas the buck harvest has only been up 9%. So,
wow.
That's pretty cool. I'll be interested to see how that rolls the next few years. So.
And that's a good thing.
Number of hunters was almost the same.
Okay.
Number of days hunted was virtually the same. And, you know, like we talked about, it'll be interesting to see what happens this fall because of the situation with the, you know, with the virus.
Yeah.
And some people still working from home and maybe be able to, you know, shake loose a little bit more in the afternoons than they normally would. And you know, we heard a lot of that back in turkey season.
Right.
It was documented in other states that have real time reporting. Okay, you know, number of hunters were up, the turkey kill was up, so on and so forth. You know, since we do a survey, we've got a time lag with getting our turkey, you know, turkey harvest and hunter effort.
Okay.
And actually, of course, that survey has already taken place. The data has been entered we've done some preliminary analysis, but given the changes that went in place this turkey season, that being a completely new season structure, the one gobbler the first 10 days of the season, back to a split season, we're actually doing a non-response follow-up survey this year to tighten things up. And so, unfortunately, normally about by September, we have our turkey harvest information, but it's probably going to be at least another month.
Okay.
We've got a company that's actually, the non-response follow-up survey is actually a telephone survey. So some of your listeners may get that survey.
Okay. And that's all regarding turkeys. In that about a month, that'll be out.
Yeah, should be. You know, it's probably sometime mid October. We've got to get the results from that non-response survey
okay. And
kind of meld it in with the response from the male survey. So I'll be curious to see. You know, I'll be curious to see if folks hunted more, if there were more hunters. And I'll tell you, as far you know, I hate to jump off of deer.
No, go ahead.
And go to turkeys, but you know, there was a lot of concern with folks, you know, in the research arena as well
yeah.
as, you know, state managers like myself with what appears to be an increase in hunters, an increase in effort, and an increase in harvest given what we've seen with turkeys in Southeast over, you know, the last decade.
Yeah.
You know, the, quote, Southeast turkey decline, and South Carolina is a poster child for that, I can tell you.
Okay.
So what I will say is...
Quick, I got about 30 seconds.
If our harvest from 2020 has increased, that is indicative of more effort related to this virus, because with the new regulation seasons and so forth, we were expecting it to decrease.
Okay.
So
not increase.
You know, that's correct. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Well, hang on, Charles. Let's take this break, and we'll come back and. And I know we're going to talk about turkey some more. We'll talk about deer some more. So, folks, hang on. We're on with Charles Ruth, DNR Deer and Turkey Project Leader. We'll be back in a second. Got to be one of the best drum intros ever, Charles.
There you go.
I remember watching this. I'm sure you remember if you ever turned on MTV, this is like one of the first ones that was ever on there. Probably one
You're
of the
right.
best ones.
Yep, Dire Straits. You're right.
That's it. Boy, have they fallen from what they used to be. But anyway.
They're old.
They're old, like us. Okay, so we kind of talked about the 2019 deer harvest report a little bit. You know, folks, if you weren't around for the first segment or just tuning in or missed it for some reason, pretty much flat. And as we ended that last segment, you were talking about turkey season and interested to see if the data proves out there are more people out there, and we're looking forward maybe next year seeing an increase. You know, I know fishing license sales were up in the state of South Carolina. And boat sales were up, and
people,
you're right.
People social distancing
yeah.
outside, man.
Yeah. Well, and,
nothing wrong with that.
And frankly, all the early medical research and all that says one of the best places you can be is outside.
That's right. Yeah.
And so, just folks, when you're outside, take your mask off. You're defeating the purpose of being outside. But anyway, all right, let's come back around and get back to deer because you do have a study that's going on down here in McCormick County. Really, when you were telling me about it down at Millery a couple of years ago, it was really a cool study between, you know, deer and coyote and where they kind of bounce off each other contact-wise. So talk a little bit about that study and what you're seeing.
Yeah, Roger, this is it's a cooperative study between DNR and Clemson University. Dr. David Jakowski, who's a wildlife professor up there. We've got two PhD students and one master's level student working on the study. Dr. John Kilgo, who works with the Forest Service Southern Research Station down at Savannah River site. If a lot of your listeners who are tuned in to deer research, they will remember
that we
did that groundbreaking research looking at deer fawns and coyotes at Savannah River site. Well, John was the one that ran that study for us. So basically the study in McCormick is somewhat replicating the earlier SRS work.
Okay.
It's being done on private land. It's being done in the Piedmont. It's more of a more typical Piedmont hunting scenario compared to SRS. The background of the study is similar in that we're catching doe deer in the wintertime, which enables us to catch fawns in the summer. We mark the fawns with radios. We let them go, and we see what happens. The new twist is, and we think two components of this study have never been done. The first is when we catch the does, we're actually using GPS radios to get real-time information from them.
Okay.
When we catch the fawns, we're using small GPS transmitters on them as well. So what that does, we'll be able to back into looking at that GPS data. Doe fawn interactions, you know, early in that life cycle. You know, we think we know things about, you know, how far the doe beds from the fawn,
sure,
how frequently the doe visits the fawn.
Right.
All that data that was collected using VHF, which is the old school headphones with an antenna, you're tracking the deer manually.
Direction finding. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
So that's a novel type thing. As you mentioned, and again, I think this is the first time this has ever happened, we're actually trapping and marking with GPS coyotes on the same property. So when it's all said and done, we're going to have deer movement data, coyote movement data. Next year, this property, even though baiting has been allowed in the Piedmont for a number of years, they do not use bait. We're going to introduce feeders and bait to see how that changes these dynamics between deer and coyotes. You know, are coyotes, do they start homesteading, feeding areas where bait is? We don't know, but we're going to try to back into some of that data. But, you know, we just finished our second field season. We started back in 2019. Overall, Roger, we've caught about 60 does, which has enabled us to then catch about 70 fawns, a little over 70 fawns. And what we have seen, we've had almost just like Savannah Riverside, which over multi-years, fawn mortality was about 70%.
We have staggering. Staggering because we had no idea.
Yep. Absolutely. And we have found 69% the first 2 years in McCormick. Of course, a lot of different things happen to baby deer, you know, deer fawns. But again, like we saw at SRS, maybe not quite to the level, but most of the mortality is related to predation.
Okay.
And most of that is, in fact, coyotes. So very similar along those lines. We got another field season to go in 2021, and you know, all this will start tightening up, and folks will start seeing, you know, news releases about some of our results. You know, we've been presenting some of our preliminary findings at some, you know, meetings like the Southeast Deer Study Group and the Wildlife Society meeting and so forth. So the best is still yet to come with that study. But, Bo, I'm going to tell you, it's interesting stuff, and I'm just pleased to be involved with Clemson on the study. And, you know, you got this new generation of researchers that are using GPS, and the technology just overwhelms me, So that's what I'll say.
Okay. You know, you kind of get a – are you familiar with the Mike Chamberlain and Joey Hinton's?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, see, we just started – if you want to talk about Mike Chamberlain, we just started a study – with Mike Chamberlain at Georgia, Brett Collier at LSU, Byrne at Missouri, and John Kilgo at Savannah Riverside, looking at turkeys, and again, swapping back to turkeys. And recall that we did some really good research down at Webb Center down in Hampton County as a lead up to these season changes that the legislature was in.
Right.
And you know, frankly, there's a number of turkey studies going on across the Southeast looking at the timing of gobbling, the timing of nesting, the success of nesting and brood rearing. All of those studies, Roger, they're great studies. Our study at Webb was great. All of that's being done on honey populations.
Okay.
And we don't, you know, back to this issue, is hunting affecting turkey reproduction? Well, you got to know what the baseline is. So what are we doing? We're looking at it on SRS where turkeys aren't hunted.
Okay.
So in a matter of years, we will have this data saying, okay, if they're not being hunted, this is what gobbling looks like. This is when they go to nest. This is how successful they are. And that's really the missing piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, when you start talking about Mike Chamberlain, Brett Collier, you're talking about the big time, the big guns in turkey research across the country. And, you know, we're locked in on that. And, you know, it'll be cool to see where that falls out in about four or five years.
Yeah, this is 2009 to 2011, the Tri-State Coyote Project.
And they put out that
bar graph of, you know, what coyotes eat and when.
Yeah.
And that's a
movement. There was a lot of stuff.
That's an eye opener there.
Yeah, that was a joint project. Of course, Mike Chamberlain ran that study. Mm-hmm. That was SC DNR, Georgia DNR, and Alabama DNR. It was a landscape look at coyotes in three different states. It wasn't just one little place like we see on a lot of studies. So, and I'll tell you something else, Roger. You know, we've also got a study going on. We're trying to get regional estimates on coyote numbers or coyote density, and we're working with Dr. Gino D'Angelo at University of Georgia. Again, this stuff gets over my head, but we're actually using DNA out of coyote scat to do this type of work. And again, this is more of this is being done in South Carolina. We're looking at the scat transects in about five different regions of the state. Again, this is not just one 10,000 acre property. Our transects span tens of thousands of acres. But what they basically do, they pick up coyote scat, they look at the DNA in it, and they can tell that this coyote is Roger or this coyote is Charles. Then they continue to repeat those transects, and they can set up a proportion of animals that they've already identified genetically versus new ones that show up the next week or the next week or the next week. And then using statistics, they can say it's kind of like mark and recapture.
Okay.
They can then generate a density or a population estimate. So that'll be interesting to see in a couple of years, you know, what those numbers look like. I mean, are we looking at four or five coyotes per square mile in some parts of the state and more or less in other parts of the state? You know, I don't know. And people are curious about that.
Absolutely. Quick, got about 15 seconds. What would you say? Would you say the coyote population has kind of leveled out now from what we saw 5 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. And we hit on this on the other side.
Okay.
But yeah, everything I'm looking at says they've peaked and started down.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right, well, let's go to another break. Give Charles's voice a chance to rest, and y'all get you another glass of sweet tea, and we'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side of the break. Welcome back to the final segment of Woods and Water South Carolina for another Saturday. Appreciate everybody tuning in and listening. Appreciate Charles Ruth from the Department of Natural Resources taking time to be on the show today. And we've had a good time, Charles. I know we've talked off the air some and caught up a lot. And I love to hear you talk about this because deer and turkey, that's your thing. And
that's right.
It really makes good radio makes my job a lot easier when I can reach out and you're so willing to come on and talk about all this stuff, and I do appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, I enjoy doing it. I sure do.
Finish your last thoughts on coyotes.
The question was, you know, where do we think coyotes are now? And I really think they've peaked and are on the way down to some Mother Nature implied level. You know, we started monitoring coyote numbers, or at least harvest estimates, back in the late 90s. We saw the increase annually almost as coyotes colonized the entire state. It looks like they peaked out probably 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
And really, Roger, I mean, based on what we get, you know, this question to deer hunters, oh, by the way, did you kill any coyotes while
right.
you were deer hunting? That's dropped down about 30% in the last 6 or 7 years. So, again, and this is exactly what you would think. You know, they're expanding into new territory. There's ample food, room to increase their numbers. But at some point, they're going to hit the wall and come down to a more manageable level. So I think they've done that. We've seen our deer harvest pick up during that same period, and all of this just makes sense to me.
Okay. Which is good, because you're the man that needs to know. It needs to make sense to you.
I hear you.
Any changes coming up as far as deer regulations go in the near future that you can see?
No, not particularly for 2020. Everything's set. It's
okay.
Just like 2019. And I really don't foresee any changes in the next few years because, you know, we're still new into the tagging system, and we need to let that churn for a while to increase, you know, the ability to us to look at the data and see what, if anything, it's actually doing. And I'm sure that the legislature is in no mood to deal with more deer legislation at this point. And so I think we need to let it eat for a few more years and see where it takes us.
What about turkeys? You were telling me there's some major changes coming for turkeys.
Well, yeah, you know, we had the new package roll out this past turkey season, 2020, based on legislation from 2019. Now, that 2019 legislation also included electronic harvest reporting, you know, what most hunters call telecheck, but it had a year added to the effective date to give us time to spool up and get these, you know, different methodologies of reporting in place. So, bottom line is for next turkey season, spring 2021, you got to report your harvest, your turkey harvest. And we will have three ways to do that. We will have a really slick smartphone app, and that's what we want people to use, because once we pay for the development of the app, reporting turkeys is free.
Okay.
So that takes a big burden off of us financially. Of course, you'll be able to report using the smartphone app. We'll have a web-based reporting, and then there will be a telephone number that you can use as well. We want to lead people away from the telephone because we have to pay for each call.
Okay.
So, but again, that's going to be in place in 2021 and beyond. And I hope, Roger, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Once we get that rolled out for turkeys and go a couple of years, I sure would like to see the General Assembly require electronic harvest reporting for deer, because it'll give us another data stream in addition to our survey work.
And if you've already got the platform for the app, it's just a matter of changing it for the species.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Okay. Cool. And we need to tell you what, you and I need to, we need to touch base first of the year after the turkey harvest has come out, report has come out, and go over this stuff again. We won't do it necessarily the whole show on turkeys, but we can do a little bit of catch up just to refresh people's memory on this stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. CWD, you know, as far as we know, we're still clear of that. You know, you do see some pictures from time to time of deer with some warts on it. Don't see the ticks in South Carolina like you do somewhere out in the Midwest and all.
Yeah, you know, briefly on chronic wasting disease, it's clearly a national, huge national health issue for members of the deer family. Been diagnosed in 27 states. Really, the closest to us is way out on the Mississippi River in western Tennessee, northern Mississippi. We have not diagnosed it. None of our bordering states have diagnosed it. So, you know, let's keep our fingers crossed. We do have a couple of regulations in place as preventative measures. One of them is a carcass importation regulation. It's actually been in place for 15 years. We're trying to do a better job of educating hunters on it. But basically what it says is if you travel to a state that has CWD, you can't bring certain parts of the carcass back, brain, spinal cord, things like that, because if those parts were disposed of out behind your house, the disease agent could contaminate the environment and become available to local South Carolina deer. So that's an important one.
Okay.
We've actually been doing messaging with your deer tags talking about that regulation, so it should be in every hunter's hand. We also have a regulation that prohibits the use of these commercial, naturally based deer urine products. But again, the CWD agent can be found in urine. These urine companies, you know, the urine comes from these big commercial deer farms in other states.
Right.
Some of these states have CWD. There is no test for this, you know, to try to figure out. You know, number one, there's no live animal test for deer.
Right.
So that's a huge problem. So again, we're following the lead of a lot of states, and at least for now, prohibiting the use of these commercial natural deer urine products. Now, if you kill a deer in South Carolina and want to take the bladder or the tarsal glands, that's fine. That's fine, at least at this point.
Okay.
So, that's kind of hitting CWD. You know, some things that hunters, that we get calls about, warts on deer, fibromas, they're very, very common. They're benign. It's no different than a wart on a person. They come off with the skin. So if a hunter kills a deer with warts, unless there's something else going on with the deer, you skin that deer, it's completely fine to consume, process and consume. We get a few calls about mange on deer. Deer do get mange from time to time. You know, one thing that that's going on right now this time of year, Roger, is hemorrhagic disease.
Right.
Part of being, you know, it's always been out there. It's part of being a deer in the Southeast. This is the time of year, late summer, early fall. You know, that disease is caused by a virus that is spread by those, what we call no-see-em, those little sand gnats. So the disease runs in a cycle annually based on the life cycle of that little no-see-em. So
okay.
This is the time. I spent 3 hours on the phone yesterday with calls about deer that don't look right. I found a dead deer. But that, you know, this is standard procedure for this time of year. And it's hemorrhagic disease what it is. The problem is a lot of folks, they've heard about chronic wasting disease, and they see a poor deer on their trail camera, and they might, my God, you know, is this CWD?
Yeah.
99.9, no, it is not.
Okay.
We haven't diagnosed CWD, but we do know this is the time of year for hemorrhagic disease. Again, we go through this every year.
Okay.
So, you know, hunters don't press the panic button. Certainly give us a call if something looks fishy, and we'll make a determination, you know, either based on the phone call, or if we think we need to, we'll try to get some samples from the deer and so forth. So, you know, overall, Roger, our deer population's in good condition. Deer numbers are good. You know, we're not fighting deer like we were, you know, around the turn of the century with exploding deer numbers.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at our antler records list, the good old days are now, brother. In the last 4 or 5 years, we have had more entries into our record system than ever. I mean, it's and what that is in my mind is we're not carrying as many deer on the landscape, which is good, number one. But number two, most hunters realize that you can't have a lot of deer and have high quality deer at the same point in time. Those things don't go together.
Yeah.
And you know, hunters these days, most of them are willing to sacrifice a little bit of quantity to get better quality. So it's all good, man. I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to this deer season.
I was fixing to say, I think a lot of us are looking forward to getting out, shutting the phone off, being away from everything, and just breathing.
That's right.
And I'm going to get a lot of it in. I'm sure you will, too.
Yeah, I got some tractor work to do this weekend, and, of course, season in upstate opens here in a couple of weeks, as does the doe season in game zones 2 and 3, 4. and poor. So, you know, by the end of this month, you'll walk out and it'll feel a little different one morning. Hair will stand up on the back of your neck, and it'll be time to go deer hunting.
And a true deer hunter will probably want to go over to that little tree over there in the yard, start rubbing his head up against it a little bit, scratching.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, me. Well, it's always good to catch up to you. You're a wealth of knowledge, and you always it's an easy conversation to have when you're on, and I appreciate that. Anything, CIFWA, you know, had a big thing here. Anything in like a minute that y'all are looking forward to planning through for next year with that bunch?
Missouri will host the meeting this fall, but it's going to be remote to my knowledge.
Okay.
You know, everything's kind of with this virus going on. You know, when we hosted it last October, there was a lot of talk about chronic wasting disease, messaging to hunters about the disease, messaging to processors about carcass disposal, taxidermists about carcass disposal. So, you know, chronic wasting disease is a big deal.
Okay.
I hope we can stay out of it.
I hope so, too. Well, folks, appreciate everybody tuning in and listening. Hope there's been some information in here you can get. Don't hesitate to go online. It's dnr.sc.gov/wildlife/deer/2019harvest. DeerHarvest.pdf. You can also get through it under the news stories. It's in there. So anyway, I hope a lot of hunters out there make time to get out there. Take somebody new this year. Introduce somebody else to the passion. Charles, I appreciate you being on the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you, Roger.
Yes, sir. All right, folks. Next week, we'll see you with more Woods and Water South Carolina.
Gone,